Greetings from K9 to diddly dum, diddly dum, diddly dum. End of message.
You're going to give us a song, K9?
We wish you a merry Christmas. We wish you a merry Christmas. We wish you a merry Christmas and a happy new year. We all like pudding. We all like pudding. We all like pudding.
So, I don't know if this is something that's becoming a tradition, Mark, but once again, Hayden is late with the delivery of the Christmas drinks. I think you ought to have a word with him. Oh, hang on. Hark! I hear something out from outside. Oh, look, there he is. He's just pulling into the square.
No,
Marcus. Can you open the doors, please, computer? Thank you.
I thought I was supposed to open the door. I hadn't even stopped the engine yet. Also, I didn't realise that the Who's In was Bluetoothed into my Coca-Cola truck, but there we go.
Oh, gosh. There's quite a blizzard of snow blowing, isn't there?
Why are you wearing no trousers, Mark?
I'm cosplaying, Hayden. Of course. Oh, I know why you're not wearing any trousers, Hayden. It's because you pulled up at that truck stop just a mile outside of town.
Why do you keep fidgeting, Doc?
I'm going commando, Hayden. I'm cosplaying too.
It helps when you want to play the oldest game known to man, playing with the balls.
Well, after a 9-month absence, you might be wondering where I have been, gents. And if you'd like to look in the back of this truck here, you'll see an abundance of presents that I spent 3/4 of the year accumulating across the globe for ourselves tonight.
Oh.
All right, ready? Let's just open the... Oh, hang on. Oh, sorry, guys. Looks like I picked up the wrong truck.
Oh,
sorry.
What are we going to do with all these John Barrowman CDs?
Well, we really need to find someone to take these CDs to the local recycling centre, because we're never going to use them. Mark, have you got anything sturdy we could carry them in?
Will these 5 sacks do?
Oh, right. Oh, and by a bit of luck, here comes 5 carol singers who can help us. Hello, it's Chris, isn't it?
Hello.
Hi, look, we're just about to start a podcast, and I wonder if you and your 4 friends here could help us by loading all these CDs into these sacks and carrying them to the recycling centre for us. I think we estimate there's about 6 sack loads here, so after your first trip, one of you will have to return to collect that last load. Okay?
Okay.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Here are the sacks. Do you want to issue one to each of your friends now? Okay. 5 sacks, Chris.
All right.
Sack Russell T. Davis. Sack Jane Tranter. Sack Phil Collinson. Sack Julie Gardner, and I'll come back.
Thank you. Oh, what a nice chap. Aren't people helpful at this time of year?
Oh, lovely.
Ooh, let's get back inside, guys. It's freezing cold out here. So, have we got no drink for Christmas?
No, I've picked up the wrong truck.
No dandelion and burdock? Oh, I'll have to break into the wine cellar.
Why do we have to break into our own wine cellar?
Because we jettisoned the door when we got rid of the jam pantry.
Oh, yeah, we need to have words about that, James. Serious words about it. I had things in there that I like. Things that I like that no longer exist.
Right, so I think we better get started, hadn't we?
Sorry, just a second. Hang on. There we go. Just getting comfy. I'm just going to join you two in the cosplaying and let it all hang out. There we go.
No, I kept my underpants on, Aidan.
Oh, sorry. There we go.
It's put me right off my turkey.
Happy Christmas, faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 191 of the Diddly Dum podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Hayden. I am an ape-like humanoid. My entire body, except my face, is covered in fur. I have a very narrow vocabulary, and I like flashing my knickers in public.
And I'm Mark.
And Merry Christmas to you all. This is our ninth traditional... I'm not sure whether that means that the first, second and third counted as being a tradition. Traditional Christmas Diddly Dum podcast, which we're celebrating by having an early Christmas present, in that we've had yet another five-star review on iTunes.
What?
Ooh.
And when I'm saying yet another, I mean we've had our second since about 8 years ago. It's from someone called Johnny D. 424242. I can't imagine who that is.
To keep him anonymous, shall we, instead of calling him Johnny D, shall we call him J Dab?
This podcast is meant to be the fourth best Doctor Who podcast, but I think it's the best. Wonderful hosts, fabulous guests, and brilliant subjects like the Knights of God. I'm not so sure about the fabulous guests, but I think wonderful hosts certainly sounds right. So, we're calling this our traditional Christmas episode, you'll find that a lot of it has changed, listeners, from previous years, as this year it's been showrun for us by Russell T. Davies himself in super woke mode. So, on Christmas Eve night, we'll be visited by an anorexic Father Christmas.
Are you sure you want to use that noun, Doc?
Oh, well, perhaps Parent Christmas will be more sensitive. They won't be able to come down the chimney, of course, because we've eschewed the burning of fossil fuels. We're also being more sensitive to our forests by not having a real Christmas tree this year. And we're cutting down on our use of plastics by not having an artificial tree either. Instead, thanks to a podcast tie-in with Disney, we've spent £100 million on a holographic Christmas tree. We spent £9.99 on research and development costs, and the rest on our electricity bill to power it. Which means that unfortunately this year we won't be able to afford to make a donation to the local homeless shelter for those foresters and fake tree makers made unemployed by our new socially conscious celebrations.
The only Yule log that I've remembered to bring, I'm afraid, is one of the chocolate ones. So that's not going to last very long.
Oh, that's all we need. What's been happening since that? Of course, Hayden has not been with us for a while.
No,
I haven't, no.
Owing to family commitments. In fact, when was the last time you were with us, Hayden?
It was back at the Capitol was the last time.
So
it hasn't been since April that I've podcasted at all, actually. It's been one hell of a hiatus. It has been needed. I don't beat about the bush, and I'm not going to lie. I've had a difficult year in some ways, and it's nice to return for this festive edition. I mean, you didn't have to kick Terence out while I was away, though. That was a bit mean, you know, and that soothsayer. You know, I haven't heard anything of those two since I've been away. So, and I can't even see them in their rooms down the hallway there. So,
I'm sorry, Bernard Mandrell moved into his room.
Oh, I bet was it Bernard Mandrell who wrote the anti-woke joke for Doc at the start of the
episode? I think it probably was.
Actually, yes. So, since last we gathered in any combination, listeners. We have, of course, had the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who celebration. The first major bit of which I seem to recall was the broadcast of a colourised version of the second ever story. The Daleks, the Survivors, the Mutants, whatever we decide to call it. What did we think of it?
It was okay. It was bright. I'll say that. I mean, I know it's very difficult to colourise these, not recolourise, as I kept saying to Suki. I know it's hard work trying to do this sort of work with precision, because of the quality of the original footage. So, you know, it's been done. If you like that, then you've got it now, haven't you? And that's great.
Such high praise, Mark. If you like that sort of thing.
No, I know there's a lot of work gone into colourising it. I'm not mocking that at all, but it's, you know, it's like a lot of things. I prefer things as close to broadcast level that as possible, really. But if people want something a bit different and if they want an edited down version of the story and stuff, then I think that's fine. They've got that now. It's not something I'll be going back to, though.
But surely, Mark, you must have been... I mean, you say about being faithful to broadcast. They kept it in 4.3 ratio. Well, yeah. So the aspect ratio was still...
Yes, yeah. They didn't stretch it out across the screen like some people do, Hayden.
What did you think, Doc?
I didn't mind it. I thought that the colorization rather made... I don't know if I was imagining this. Rather, because it just because it, the fact it made their faces look more realistic... I thought that it made the expressions on their faces clearer. It certainly made, unless I've just not noticed this before, William Hart, the First Doctor's hair stand up almost vertically from his head. And I thought, well, hopefully they learn some lessons from that and they never have another Doctor with his hair artificially stuck up vertically from his head. In fact, I almost enjoyed more the coloured montage at the end. You know, they did a little clip from Toymaker and things like that. I saw a fair few people not happy with how it was edited, but the fact that they took away about 95% of the journey through the through the tunnel onto the mountain just made it for me.
Yeah, I think on the whole it was a relative success. I think you start to appreciate the differences between the quality of the episodes, the actual quality of the film prints, I noticed, because I think a lot of these were suppressed field copies.
Oh, what does that mean?
So instead of being the 405 line, which is as it would have been transmitted at the time, you know, 405 line film, it would be suppressed down to something like, is it 200, 180 or 200 lines? So there's less information in the frames. It's condensed to the breast. So that's why it's called a suppressed field copy. And you could see from section to section where they lopped out. Was it, how many minutes was it again? Just under 3 hours, isn't it? Because it's seven episodes. So they lopped out about 4 episodes worth of content in the end. So it made that look a little more stark, considering it's now in HD and all coloured. On the whole, it was a success. The jazz montage bit made me wince a bit.
Oh, the music was pretty dreadful, wasn't it? Well, not dreadful, but I don't think it suited it.
No, and some of the callbacks to flashbacks earlier on in the episode as well were, I didn't think they were needed. But apart from that, yeah, it's probably like a 7 or 8 out of 10 for a project. It's the first of many. I've heard that apparently the War Games is going to be the next one that they do.
I'm trying to work out whether this is... fabulous news, or this is a prelude to Hayden make a dreadful joke. Seriously.
Yeah, they are going to do more, yeah, and apparently it's the War Games. That's the internet rumour anyway. But, yeah, apparently the War Games is up next.
Mm. I mean, I was a little surprised at some of the people involved in the making of it, because I'd actually phoned up the BBC and said, I think I'd be great getting involved in this rumoured colourisation of the Dalek story. And you know what they said to me?
What?
What can you do for us that Ben Cook can't?
Oh, yeah, oh, thanks, yeah.
This was followed that same night by what I think we all assumed was a rescreening of An Adventure in Time and Space. 5 minutes from the end of which, my doorbell downstairs rang and my takeaway arrived, so I just switched it off. And it was only later on, much later on, perhaps the next day on Twitter, that someone had mentioned that what they'd done in at the very end, where originally William Hartnell was smiling across the console at Matt Smith, is they'd replaced Matt with Shooty, which I loved, but I would absolutely adore to have been surprised by that. Mm. I mean, a lot of times I say, why can't they just, you know, make the effort to surprise us with these things instead of trumpeting them? Probably that is when they actually do it. I forget to watch it. So.
Well, I didn't watch it at all because I thought, well, I've seen it before.
Yeah, same here.
So I thought, maybe not. But I heard apparently that the bits including An Unearthly Child, have been edited out. So there's
Or they've reinserted them with different things on the screen, with the actual Adventure in Time and Space actors like David Bradley, etc., playing them rather than the original. Which I think we all know why that is, and it's for a reason, which I think it's a season of joy and happiness and goodwill towards men. I don't think we'll mention who that was due to.
No, it doesn't need going over again. Did you guys talk about on the previous podcast about the Children in Need sketch?
No, because we recorded it beforehand.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which is unfortunate, really, because it was Genesis and Daleks one as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have been perfect timing, but it was just slightly imperfect.
I think it was interesting as Russell T. Davis working out his retrospective guilt at having built his fame and career on casting white and straight actors. Because I thought, I didn't look anything like NIDA. He was in the long boots and the uniform with the coloured flash on the collar. I thought, he must be NIDA. And then I thought, oh, the other guys must be, the instructors must be NIDA. And I actually assumed at first, oh, it's meant to be Davros before he had his accident, or his laboratory was bombed by the Thals. Unfortunately, having a week beforehand, in preparation for our Genesis the Daleks review, I read so deeply into all of Terry Nation's explanations for the history of Davros, I thought, no, that's not true, because it's supposed to have happened several decades before he actually started coming up with the Daleks. Mm. But there we are. It's one of those things where I think you can decide whether or not to use it in headcanon or not.
Yeah.
I think the whole idea is that, yes, the evil being portrayed as disabled is a trope, but it seems to be a trope that Russell has only become aware of post-Journey's End. You know, not when he was writing characters like John Lumich, Max Capricorn, his own Davros. Because I think the point about Davros is that in Doctor Who, being an evil villain isn't bad. It's super cool. I remember I used to be well jealous of my best friends. Sorry, of my former best friends. I think I dodged the bullet there, listeners. Rowdy Chopper Bike. You know the one with the sort of curved padded seat that goes up your back, and the gear lever between your legs. Can I have a go on your bike? I used to pretend that with that messing around with that lever, that was Davros. Anyone else's thoughts on that?
I didn't have a problem with it, really, but I can understand why he'd want to change that for Children in Need at night, considering there would be, you know, children who are disabled watching it. But I thought, actually, oh, he's like yourself, it was just Davros at an earlier stage. And I thought, okay, well, that's what it is, and it's Julian Beach. He's a really good actor. He's obviously a very good Davros. So I thought, okay, that'll do. That's fine. Moving on.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's better not to actually listen to what Russell T. Davis has to say about things, and it's better just to take the stuff that appears on the screen, how it's presented, rather than sometimes listen to him go into these sort of slightly kind of long explanations as to why he's done something. Because inevitably he ends up kind of slightly missing the point in some things, like with the Davros. He was saying, oh, because this guy's horribly scarred from... And it's like, well, he's not... I always got the impression with Davros that he's just incredibly old and desiccated. That's what I always presumed about him. I didn't presume that it was like his flesh was anything other than old age, you know?
But also, you know, Russell's excuse that, no, there's no way that I'm going to rewrite the Flux and the Timeless Children. I would never do something so insulting to my best mate, Chris. But he's quite happy to tar and feather Terry Nation and the designers of Genesis of the Daleks as ableist. Seems rather bizarre.
Yeah, like I say, I can see the point. It's not a trope that you want to keep expanding on, is it?
Nah. Well, certainly, probably, I don't think I'll be watching Unleashed again after Russell's explanations, not least because it's made me realise that actually Mark has been lying to us all these years.
Lying?
And he's not Welsh at all. You don't sound Welsh. I've heard a Welsh accent now.
Absolutely.
Other than that, I'm not sure if anything's been happening on TV as though with Doctor Who.
It's been a fairly quiet 60th anniversary. Very, very uneventful.
what we're planning to do, faithless listeners, is so as not to take time away from our standard Christmas games episode that's traditional, we're not going to go into the three specials in any great depth. And also, there are elements of it which, if you let me loose on it, would also be taking away from the idea that we're in the middle of a season of goodwill to all men.
Oh, no, really? Okay.
Not the quality of them, just the idea that we're being... I think someone described it as being told by a sanctimonious teenager to educate yourself. So, you know, the sort of people who say, hey, boomer.
Oh, okay, boomer, yeah, and all that.
And so what we think we're going to do is we'll do proper, more in-depth reviews of the three specials in our episodes in the new year. The first of which should be, of course... the Diddly Dum Podcast's 10th anniversary episode.
Oh, blimey.
Gosh.
Whoever thought that would but would last that long?
Wow.
So, general thoughts on the three specials, guys? Do you want me to start? I thought what was interesting, I really enjoyed them. It's just, it's one of the, you know what I'm like. Once I start writing my notes for the podcast, and I start thinking, yeah, it was 99% good, but there's one little problem in it. And then I'll spend, 99% of my review of it talking about the problem. I thought the tone of them was very interesting. I thought the Star Beast was a fun romp.
Yeah.
The giggle was brilliantly entertaining. But I thought Wild Blue Yonder was just brilliantly clever and thought-provoking. I actually love the new scientific advisor who actually showed that all you need to do is to write and cast people in wheelchairs brilliantly. You know, you don't need to retcon the idea. I think I loved how when she first meets the Doctor, they have this very laid-back approach. Oh, I see you've turned up, sort of thing. I love that.
Yeah, in your dreams.
Yeah. Even though, I mean, this is the sort of thing I could really hate, possibly. But I think the budget shows a lot. But normally I'm like, you know when he's creating a force field of this sonic and then sliding it out into the hall?
Mm.
Now, I could imagine being furious at that. But the thing is, it looks so fabulously cool visually that I couldn't help liking it. I love, you know, he, just before he meets the new scientific advisor, he uses it, Sonic, to create a little TV screen in the air.
A little iPad, yeah.
I love that. When they're having the battle in the street, the unit soldiers and the Roth warriors, they've got some aerial shots of that street battle. They look absolutely extraordinary. Wild Blue Yonder, a combination of Midnight and Alice in Wonderland, I thought. And I was actually thinking, I felt quite ashamed of myself, but I was thinking... at the beginning of that, because we'd just seen the Isaac Newton opener, cold open, or whatever they call it. And I was thinking, oh, I don't think much of their sort of hammy acting that David and Catherine were doing. And, I mean, you all know that I've never particularly liked the 10th Doctor or Donna. And I was thinking, oh dear, isn't it a pity that they're not actors who I particularly like? And then they go on throughout Wild Blue Yonder to, I think, perform... extraordinarily well, I think. I think it's really significant how different David is as the 14th Doctor to how he is as the 10th. He's far more serious. He's acting far more quiet and nuanced. I loved it. Thought the CGI and everything was brilliant. In fact, fairly spectacular, really. Not true what a lot of people are saying. Oh, the longest corridor in Doctor Who, because don't forget the corridor on the outside of Nerva Beacon in Ark in Space is a circle, so therefore it's unending. And the giggle... I thought Neil Patrick Harris's performance was extraordinary, although I could have done without the silly German accent. This is the bit where if I were doing a full in-depth research of this, I'd start ranting about stuff. Oh, particularly the episode of Unleashed that followed this. And the stuff in it I loved. Jimmy Redgrave as Kate Stewart, I've always thought, God, it's so bland and boring. That little 30-second thing she does where they take off her bracelet and she becomes a ranting loony. I've never seen her performing like this. It's brilliant. So I would say Wild Blue Yonder, technically the best. the giggle enjoyably the best, and the Space Beast just a very good fun romp, although possibly still done much better in the original Doctor Who comic strip.
No. For me, one of the highlights of the specials coming back, and one of the reasons I was so excited about Star Beast, was because of the comic strip. And that moment at the start of the episode where it says, based on a story by Pat Mills and Dave Gibbons on screen on my telly, it was just, ah, oh, it is so exciting. And that's the only Doctor Who Unleashed I've watched so far, is that one. Because, well, because I keep hearing clips of the other ones, and I think, oh, do you know what, I don't need to know this stuff at the moment. I'll re-watch them and start worrying about what Russell's saying when we do our deeper look into them. But watching that first Unleashed and seeing Pat Mills and Dave Gibbons really happy on the set and meeting the Meep for the first time, I just thought, oh, it's just lovely, really lovely. And it's really nice as well because Pat Mills is so, quite rightly, feels like he's been screwed over quite a lot in the comics industry. And he can be quite curmudgeonly about it, which is his right. But he obviously clearly delighted to be on set. And also clearly delighted that the BBC, even though they didn't have to, because it's, I believe it's Panini's copyright, but the BBC still insist on paying Pat and Dave. So that was, it was just really nice.
I thought that was lovely, that. What's it called? Whether you don't have to? And it's an ex gratia payment, isn't it? You don't have to do
Yeah.
But it's...
Yeah, I just thought that was very respectful and really nice. And like I said, just such a treat just to see their names on screen in the 21st century.
I wonder if Russell did that because he thought, I don't have to do this, but if I do it, just think how much it will piss off. What's...
Oh, let's not mention him.
Thoughts on the three specials, Hayden?
How was it seeing David Tennant back on your screen as the Doctor?
Sorry, I'm just while you were talking, I was just limbering up.
This is what our listeners want to know, Hayden.
I was cracking all of my bones. I was just limbering up on the sidelines waiting for my number to be called. So how many years back are we looking now at David Tennant's run? I mean, almost from the off, I didn't like him as the Doctor. As an actor, I've had no qualms at all. As a person, he seems a very nice guy. But on the whole, I think he's a decent fella and a very good actor. But his Doctor never landed with me. The 10th Doctor never landed with me.
No.
I thought he was smug. I thought he was selfish. I thought he was a lot of negative things. I didn't like the way he treated his companions. I thought if it was any other actor in that role, the whole Doctor and Rose love dynamic relationship would have been very creepy indeed.
Mm.
But they got away with it because it was David Tennant. And then I literally remember The End of Time was my annus horribilis. and it was for all these reasons. It was all coming to a head. It was the giving his Doctor this really special goodbye. You know, okay, the show had been incredibly popular. He'd helped to make it very popular again, and it was a mainstay. It was one of the biggest shows on TV at the time. He was one of the biggest stars. But I think the fact that he had been in QI that Christmas, Catherine Tate, he was appearing in all the idents and was even, never mind the Buzzcocks, and was also voicing some of the BBC One idents as well. I was just like, you can't escape this. And being a Doctor Who fan, I felt like I was being forced to watch this. Oh, isn't he brilliant? Oh, isn't David Tennant amazing? Oh, isn't he this? Isn't he that? And it really got on my nerves. And then when you see the Doctor in that story doing the, you know, every time I regenerate, it feels like I'm dying. Someone else goes off and I'm left with nothing. And all of this, you know, and then where's my reward? And it's just so self-pitying, so selfish. Mm. The things I don't like the Doctor to be, the things I don't associate with my favourite traits with the character. And, of course, the fact that everyone either seemed to love him or be in love with him.
Yeah.
Really pissed me off at the time. Obviously, as time's gone on, there's been more and more people have said, yes, actually, that incarnation is problematic. And when he came back, I thought, oh, no, because we've just come through the Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall era where I really haven't enjoyed parts of it.
Really?
Obviously, I don't know what would have given it away, Mark, to be honest. But I really liked The Power of the Doctor, and I thought, well, OK, if they come back, and Tennant's 14th Doctor is nothing like the 10th. This will actually work for me. This will work. So, of course, when he's on the cliff top at the end of Power of the Doctor, he's doing a what? 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 Thing again. I just thought, oh, shit, here we go.
Sod this.
But I was pleasantly surprised with these three specials because I don't know whether it's just the fact that the actor has obviously aged as well. But if that's supposed to be an approximation of the 10th Doctor further down the line, when he's a bit more mellow and he's not as self-pitying and, oh, aren't I great, oh, I'm brilliant all the time. This is actually how I would have liked to have seen David Tennant play the 10th Doctor, to be honest with you. I thought he was really good, and I actually really enjoyed this 14th Doctor. The moment that summed him up for me, and the moment when I thought that he is nothing like the 10th, was the moment when he's about to regenerate, and Donna's said something along the lines of, I'm going to be with him while he's dying. And he looks at Donna and goes, it's not dying, like that. And instead of that, I don't want to go, he goes, Alon Z.
Yeah, I was so pleased that
I was absolutely convinced that Russell would write him saying, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
They didn't fall into that trap. So I was happy with that. I was actually, do you know what? On the whole, I was happy for a happy ending. And I don't know whether it's because I've been on a bit of a journey myself recently, but when you do look back at the 10th Doctor's era, Russell's writing and his master plan for that incarnation was brutal when you think about it. You know, he loses everyone at the end, doesn't he? So then when he's given a second chance with this face again, he finds Donna and her family, and he actually has a family by the end of it. Not only that, but he gets a wake-up call in the form of a future self, effectively saying to him, you need to rest, you need to stop. You know, I'm only better because you get better further down the line. And I sometimes think the best therapist probably is your future self. So it is like, I thought that was very clever too. I really didn't mind that it's yet another David Tennant Doctor out there in the cosmos, because it just worked this time. It was a happier end, you know. Not much more I could add to that really on that point. But with the actual specials themselves, yeah, I thought all three of them were pretty good, actually. I agree with Doc. I did think the Star Beast, it was more of a romp, wasn't it? It was more of an entrance in. But I am more of a fan of the original source material, I have to say. I do prefer the comic strip. But I loved how they brought it to life on the screen. And apart from a line about, oh, that's the trouble with you men, you can't let things go.
Oh, Dan, yeah.
Which I kind of thought, well, you, Russell. But anyway.
Can I just say, with regards to that, first, I thought that seems like a bit of a... I mean, obviously, that's just something that Donna's saying, which is an odd thing for, I don't know, seems... But anyway, I think actually that line works in the context of just, if you're just thinking about, to use the quote, male presenting doctors. Because if you think about David Tennant, spent ages going around going, oh, I don't want to go now, as you've just said. And then you get Matt Smith, who admittedly couldn't actually regenerate, but hung around for decades on the planet Christmas. And then you've got the 12th Doctor, who then spends, because Chris Chibnall didn't want to do a Christmas episode, ends up having to hold on to his regeneration for even longer, and ends up staggering through another story when he should have regenerated at the end of the Doctor Force. Is it Doctor Force? World Enough Time. The Doctor Force, isn't it? So she's got a point that doctors don't just let it go, and they are male presenting, aren't they?
Oh, I didn't mind that bit. I mean, I think it's a bit irritating, this sort of men thing. But if they'd found another way of saying it, which other than male presenting, which really just sounds as if RTD had spent half an hour on Wikipedia checking what the correct way of saying it was, I wouldn't really have minded. I just think it sounded rather silly. I do think Russell is a far, far better writer than he is social commentator. It's not that I disagree with his social views, it's just that whenever he gets onto them, his writing seems to shift from something which occasionally approaches genius to something which more resembles the nuance of a line of Chris Chibnall dialogue. And I must say, Hayden, while we're cosplaying, I am glad that you put your underpants on, because... I do have problems with your anus horribilis as well, so.
Sorry, I shouldn't talk while bending over, should I? I wouldn't have a problem and say, that's the trouble with you, Doctor. You can't let go. But she said, that's the trouble with you men.
That's the point, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the bit for me. If she had have said, yes, that's, you know, letting go, Doctor, and that's it. But, yeah, I can understand why certain people are feeling a bit threatened by, you know, these three specials of Who, because for lines like that, I guess. But the rest of it, you know, was absolutely fine. While Blue Yonder was good.
Who's that banging on the front door? Who's banging on the door? Hang on, let's just put out the window.
It's not Ian Levine,
oh,
is it?
Oh, my God. It's the local branch of the Leshaw Appreciation Society. Oh, hang on, they've just put a pamphlet to the letterbox. I've not quite worked out how if we have a pair of Dalek doors on the front of the Hoosier, we might have a letterbox in them, but there we are. I mean, no one seems to mind the cat flap for the Praedonian seal, do they? Oh, they're protesting. They're demanding that we condemn Russell for his treatment of Liz Shaw, her not only by allowing the doctor to claim that he was Unit's first scientific advisor, when she actually was, but also by allowing them to suggest that Mel was the doctor's first red-headed companion.
Well, I mean, the doctor didn't interject, did he? But who's Mel to think that there was Turlough and
exactly,
Liz
yeah.
Shaw before him? So I didn't mind that. That wasn't. And just actually, while we're on the subject of Bonnie Langford, she was really good. I thought she was really good.
Yes, she was lovely, wasn't she?
I mean, the fact that they gave her more character in about three sentences than I think she had in about,
yes,
what, 20 episodes back in the mid-80s does scream a lot as well. But it was lovely that she came up. It was random to see her there. It was just insane, but lovely at the same time. It's that thing after Power of the Doctor. I thought, well, of course, you know, of course the Doctor's former companions will be helping out Unit. They're the ones who've got the experience of fighting aliens. It makes sense, you know. And now, obviously, Donna's working for them, isn't she? Oh, she talked about her 60 grand a year and 2 weeks off, wasn't it, or something. And then she said, how about 120 in 5 weeks? Done. It's just a look of yes afterwards.
Yeah, that's exactly how contract negotiations go in the civil service, I can assure you.
I bet, yeah. I loved all three, actually. I have gone back. The bi-generation, I thought, was a really clever way of doing it. I wasn't spoilt before it.
Neither was I.
I was.
So?
I just caught someone saying on Twitter, I reckon it's going to be, they're going to regenerate, so they end up spending half the final episode as conjoined twins. And I thought, this is some elaborate joke on Twitter, so I'm not really got the time to read into how it comes about. I didn't realise it was actually someone who'd heard the leak. They were actually just honestly saying what it was. I didn't mind it at all. I loved it. I didn't get until after the show, and I was, you know, on Gallifrey base, that what had happened with them sharing their clothes.
Yeah.
I thought, why is he in his underpants? And then I realised, because David, he loses his shirt, but he's still got a vest on, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think I'd actually noticed that he wasn't wearing a white shirt anymore. I thought that was a lovely idea.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And I thought, I mean, Shooty as Eric has been far my favourite character in Sex Education, but I saw him on the thing they did at Windsor Castle after the coronation where he's doing a brief scene from Shakespeare with someone on the stage. And I thought, I'm not sure about this. I thought, oh dear, is it only when he's playing Eric on Sex Education that I like him? But I loved him as soon as he came on this, because he's doing, which I think is the correct way of playing the Doctor, it's a slightly heightened form of acting. You know, it's not being barking, but you're pushing it just slightly above the level of deadly seriousness. I thought it was absolutely lovely.
Well, plus also he's comes up, he's newborn, isn't he? So he's bouncing around like a little puppy. And also, I guess that, as they say, he's, although 14 hasn't started his rehab yet, 15, who's there, has already benefited from it. And so he's suddenly got this weight lifted off his shoulders, and I thought that was really nice. And I thought the bi-generation worked for me as well. I didn't really see any problems with it. I haven't been online much, but I caught somebody saying that they were pleased, they knew about it a year beforehand, because otherwise it would have spoilt the story for them. And
what, the bi-generation? Or...
Yeah. And
looks like you finally found one of Russell's social media accounts. And what did we think Thoughts on the final scene of Wild Blue Yonder when they return to Camden and open the TARDIS door?
Oh, bless.
Wasn't it lovely? Can you imagine how easy it would have been for the only scene they managed to get in the can with Bernard before we lost him had been just something that had been in the middle of... They don't necessarily film in chronological order, do they?
No. What if they started with the scene with him shooting moles?
Oh, there's been a lot of protest about that.
It's an odd thing, isn't it?
How can I love the man, knowing that he's...
Yeah.
It's one of those things, isn't it? It's like with me and Suggs from Madness, right? Love Madness, love Suggs. And then when I realised as a kid he was a massive Chelsea fan, you then start looking and thinking, oh, I'm not so sure about you. I don't think it will happen, but I would like to see Neil Patrick Harris come back. Because I thought he was really good. Even the Spice Up Your Life bit, which normally is the moment where my toes would curl.
I thought that was utterly brilliant.
He carried it off because he was sinister and he was scary. At the same time as he was being funny as well, I thought. So I thought that worked.
At this time of the year, I find it, with the days getting shorter and it getting darker earlier and nights are longer, it's all cold and a bit miserable. And there's extra pressures coming up to Christmas and stuff on a lot of people. And it can be quite a difficult time of year sometimes. And I've had nothing but displeasure mostly from Doctor Who for the last few years as well. And so when these came up and I knew we weren't reviewing them, and I knew that I could sit there, watch an episode without a notebook, just sit there and watch it. It's like being able to climb into a hot foamy bath and relax and just go, ah, it was just like having an old friend back. With the Star Beast, and it was great, just no pressure, just sitting there watching it. I had no real expectations. I avoided any spoilers for any of the stories. I tried to avoid sort of Doctor Who Twitter a bit more than normal, and it was just lovely, and I just really enjoyed it. And it was a romp, it was fairly goofy, but I mean, I was surprised how much of the actual comic strip they kind of... The story's pretty much exact, isn't it, almost? So up until Donna and the Doctor in the actual spaceship itself. And, yeah, it looked amazing. Like the production values were just fabulous. And so it's lovely to see that money being put to good use, because the Meep spaceship in that warehouse just looked incredible, you know? And as Doc said, the special effects with the sonic screwdriver are brilliant. I don't know why anyone would have a problem about those, because surely that's just... The Sonic's always updating and doing stuff, isn't it? So, and it makes more sense, really, that he can actually create almost like a holographic tablet at mid-air with it and read that, as opposed to just... It makes more sense than him just staring at the handle and going, oh, look at the numbers on that. It's like, what? It's just the handle. But it's really good. I was really, really pleased with that one. Wild Blue Yonder, I felt, was a little bit Emperor's New Clothes, I think.
Oh, really?
It had quite a big sort of build-up, reading sort of like various... I did read some of the social media stuff from BBC and stuff, and it all seemed to be suggesting that it was going to be this utterly mind-blowing story. And I think Russell himself said that there's never been a Doctor Who story told like this one before.
Wasn't he very obviously saying, oh no, I can't give you any information on this, it's full of secrets? And that's what prompting all these rumours. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, which is good, because the more secrecy before an episode, the better, as far as I'm concerned. The less I know going into a story, the happier I am, I think, generally. But yeah, I just thought, I mean, and the Doctor at the edge of the universe on a spaceship, that's happened previously and stuff, hasn't it? I think the Terminus, and it's just a lot of story beats and things. I felt like I'd kind of seen them before. And like you said, Doc, it's very midnight. I like Alice in Wonderland comment there.
That was very much related to the, you know, them growing much larger. I thought it was very funny.
Yeah, but I found it dragged a bit for me. And that first bit where the Doctor's been saying my arms are too long, and then the camera pans down to his really long arms and big hands, and I burst out laughing, and that's not good, because it's not supposed to be. It was totally involuntary. I couldn't help but just laugh. It just looked ridiculous. I wasn't like, oh, wow, man, that's amazing. I was like, oh, God, that's ridiculous. I don't know. It just... I mean, they're really good special effects on those arms, really, but it just looked so comical. It punctured the darkness and the threat for me. And, yeah, I don't know, just... I thought it was an okay episode, just the way it was just... It was very much... I thought it was a very typical kind of RTD bottle episode with a massive budget.
Mm.
And some very cleverly done special effects, because I had a... There's some of the production team posted footage of them doing the special effects on it, didn't they? And there's a lot of physical special effects in there that you don't appreciate. But it was okay. To be honest, I found the whole thing a bit dark, really, and it wasn't the it wasn't the joyous, warm embrace that I got from the Star Beast. But then we came to the giggle, and yeah, I pretty much loved it from start to finish. I did think Chris Chibnall, who had his one of his most popular moments, his big moments of glory, was the master doing his little dance to Rasputin. Yeah. I thought, oh crikey, this is absolutely it's dropped one on it from a big height, really, hasn't it? It's it was excellent. It was superb. Yeah, it's strange how, as you've both said, I think something that's so funny, like when he's spinning Kate Stewart round and throwing into the wall.
That was strange, wasn't it? She wasn't just bumping into the wall, was she?
She's thrown face first into it. But it was kind of comical and dark, but it was supposed to be, as opposed to just, you know, my laughing during Wild Blue Yonder, which was... My friend Nick as well watched it. I think he quite enjoyed it. He wasn't very happy with the bi generation because he wasn't keen on the idea of whole multiple versions of the 10th Doctor living out a cosy existence with companions. But yeah, I thought Shooty was fabulous as well. Like I said, just thought he's really good. I mean, his screen presence, I think he looks amazing, you know, on the screen. And his portrayal of the Doc's great.
And we're getting out on Christmas Day.
And we are getting it on Christmas Day, yeah.
TARDIS interior? It looks extraordinary, doesn't it?
Fantastic. Yeah.
So as you took that bloody coffee in the console, I thought, oh, hang on, even Disney are not going to fund an entirely new TARDIS interior, are they? After it's only been on for 30 seconds. So I wasn't that surprised it stayed. I think it looks gorgeous.
Mm.
Right, I think, listeners, having spent as long as we just have on those mini-reviews, we better get on to doing our traditional Christmas games. Otherwise, we'll never get them in before the end of the podcast. So, which of the two of you wants to start?
I don't mind starting, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it then.
Hayden, what have you got for us?
Right, gentlemen. I've been away for 9 months coming up with 11 questions. No, I haven't really. It's just one of those...
And it don't seem a day too long.
You turned into... what's her name when you sung that then? Who was the one from Coronation Street? Hilda Ogden.
Hilda, that was what I was doing.
We've been together now for 40 years, and it don't seem a day.
Hilda! Will you stop making that row?
So, here is a game that I've devised. Well, I haven't devised, I've sort of half nicked it, but there we go. Called Guess Who?
What? Oh, wait, I was expecting you to say who said what.
No, I did a little bit of a change this year, dear listeners. So you've got three clues, which I shall read out. If you don't get the person by the first clue, then I'll give the second and then obviously on to the third. There's 10 questions and there's one tiebreaker, just in case we have a situation if it goes to 5-all.
Just in case we have a situation.
God help you all if it does.
This is going to infuriate Mark because he spent so long putting it together. He's sitting there with reams and reams of every line that's ever been spoken in Doctor Who written out in his fountain pen.
Yeah, getting my what polished for every time you say who said what. What? Just to irritate you. And it's, damn it. Are we taking it in turns?
No, you're not. No. So this is basically fingers on buzzers as to who you may think it is. It may be a doctor, a companion, a villain, an ally, a one-off character. It could be, you know, anything. But for example, here's an example round. So the first one is, I am a female. And then if you don't get that one, then the second question will be, I come from Gallifrey. And that will be, if you don't know who it is after that, you can buzz in or not.
If I jump in and say, Chancellor Flavia and it's wrong. Do I have to drop out then, or just, does Mark get a guess and then you carry on and we can both keep doing it?
Yeah, you both get a guess. Okay, so and then the third question is, I used to be Mary Tam. And then the third one's the most obvious one, which will hopefully then prompt an answer.
Is there different points for whether you get it on the first one or on the second one or on the last one?
Unfortunately not, Mark. It's just a point.
Okay, right.
Otherwise, we could be here all night. It's like, oh, it's 25 all. This is incredible. We've only done 6 questions. Okay, right. Fingers on buzzers, gents.
Mm-hmm.
Question 1. I am an ape-like humanoid.
No comment.
Oh, was that Doc?
Grunty the Ogron.
Unfortunately not, no. Right, second question. My entire body, except my face, is covered in fur. Mark, again, if you say.
No comment.
Does only Mark get to guess now, or can I continue?
No, we're on to the second question, so you can both continue.
All right, okay.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Is it the Tarwyn Wood Beast?
It is, actually, yeah.
Oh, no!
Yes, it is. Yeah, and the third question was, I live in the woods. So that is 1 to Mark, then.
All these weeks I've spent watching Only Connect on iPlayer, and it's doing me no good.
All that revision, and then Mark just wants... Do you know, I used to hate kids like that at school, who do no revision before the exam, and then they get A's. Incredible.
Oh, clever ones, you mean? Yeah, I
remember
those.
Them, yeah. Okay, right. Question number 2. My hobbies include screaming and running away from things. That's Mark.
Is it Victoria?
It isn't. No, it isn't, I'm afraid.
I was going to say, it hardly narrows it down.
Are you going to have a guess, Doc?
Are you going to have a guess at this stage, or are you going to wait for the second question?
Susan.
Oh, bloody hell, he's only gone and got it.
Oh, yes!
It's 1-1. But the other 2 questions, I'll read them out, even if it, obviously we got the right question.
We've got some trouble writing them.
Exactly. So, you know, if I've gone to the effort, why not? So the second question for that one was going to be, in books it is canon that I may have married David Cameron.
Yes, of course.
And then question number 3 would be, my ankles aren't the strongest.
I wouldn't have got it by then.
Exactly, yeah. So the third one should hopefully be the hardest. Okay, I guess that's 1-1 then. Right, question number 3. This is good. Well, I don't know how you two are finding it, but I'm loving it.
I'm thrilled.
Right, question number 3. He plays a good poker face, ladies and gents. Question number 3. The doctor once saved me as a child. Or when I was a child, sorry. That's Doc.
Davros.
He's good at this. Sorry, I shouldn't swear.
It's not, is it?
Yeah, it is. Oh, my God. And the other 2 questions that was, I was once the head of my own scientific elite, and I was also known as the creator. Oh, my goodness. Okay, right.
And I've never been in a wheelchair. And yes, Hayden... To re-emphasise your point there, you really shouldn't be swearing during the quizzes, especially given that in order to differentiate my buzzer from Mark's, I've had to disconnect the swear bleeper and use that for my own. So it could get very distracting.
Okay. 2-1 to Doc after 3 questions, blimey. Right, question number 4. I was born on Christmas Day.
Jesus. When's Jesus been in it? I don't know.
Oh, you didn't press your buzzer.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah, I haven't been pressing the buzzers. Ooh. Okay, go on then, Doc.
Is it Jesus, Hayden?
I'm afraid it isn't, Doc.
Oh, damn. I thought I'd got Mark on a technicality of that. Okay, next question.
Number 2. I don't like pears. Oh, that's Mark.
It's Amy Pond.
It isn't, I'm afraid.
God, no. Wait a minute, no, it's... Oh, bollocks.
Shall I move on to question three, or is Doc...
Hang on, who do we know when they were born on Christmas Day or not?
Yeah, I don't know why I thought it was Amy Pond.
No, I can't think.
Okay, right, last question then, in this set. I once spent billions of years punching through a wall made of diamond.
It's the 12th Doctor.
It is the 12th Doctor. Well done, Mark, because he made his debut on Christmas Day in 2013 in The Time of the Doctor. And you're both elated by that answer. There we go.
To all.
Good to all. This is excellent. Fantastic stuff. Right, question number five. I come from Pease Pottage. That's Mark.
It's a Melanie Bush.
It is Melanie Bush. Mark, what a comeback. What a comeback. Oh, and the further two questions to that were, I'm a computer programmer, but you wouldn't have known it back in the day. And this is a pub question. I'm sure this is a pub quiz, Doctor Who pub quiz question, right? I'm the only companion to have been present at two full regenerations.
That's true.
Isn't that crazy? Because even though Rose and Donna were at the one where Tennant regenerates into himself.
Yes.
Because that's a bit of a cheat. It means that Mel was there for Colin, even though she wasn't conscious, obviously. She was there for Colin into Sylvester, and then there for David Tennant into Shooty. So...
Okay.
In fact, you could probably say, actually, that Mel was the midwife because she literally pulled Shooty out of David Tennant, didn't she? But there you go.
Somebody had to do it.
Why would I leave that graphic imagery in your mind?
It's a filthy job, but someone has to do it.
How many rounds are there altogether?
There's 10. And a tiebreaker, if we get there. So it's 3-2, so we're at the halfway stage. Right, question number six. I have a very narrow vocabulary, Mark. Don't say it. Quiet at the back. Quiet at the back.
That's not Brucey. He's out on the lawn shooting moles.
Actually, it was me touching the buzzer and I got electrocuted. There you go. I was shooting moles. Okay, I have a very narrow vocabulary. Oh, it's Brucey.
Is it Jamie?
No, it's not Jamie. Mark?
I don't know. Carry on. I'm not going to bother.
My pet hates are spacecraft, snow, and rivers.
What?
This is probably the hardest one on here, but it would be the most satisfying one when it gets answered. Or maybe I should say if it gets answered.
I give up.
Yeah, I said all right.
The final question in this set. I also detest bikes, paying for them, and getting wet.
What?
That's 3 watts in a row. Who do you think you are, David Tennant?
Bikes.
Is it Ryan?
It isn't. No, it's not.
Bloody bike! Throws it 2 miles.
Oh,
is that Doc?
Is it Pigbin Josh?
It is Pigbin Josh. Yes, it is. I told you that'd be satisfying when you got that one.
If Mark hadn't brought up Ryan and brought up the vision of someone falling off a bike, I wouldn't have got that.
Damn.
That's quite proud of that one. You should be proud of getting that one, Doc. Right, question number 7. I can go from 0 to 60 in just a couple of seconds. Yes, Mark?
Bessie.
No.
Oh. Frig.
Oh, who was that? Was that Doc?
Yeah. Me. The Whomobile?
It was the Whomobile.
I knew as soon as it wasn't Bessie. I was like, oh, God.
The other two questions were, I once appeared on Blue Peter and I can fly and glide over innocent bystanders.
Oh, John Noakes.
John Noakes got run over by the Hoover.
Climbing up Nelson's column.
Right, question number 8. You don't know I'm here. Mark.
The silence.
Wow, that's a great one. I didn't think anyone was going to get that straight away.
Done.
Yes, that is the silence. The next question was, we are a part of a church. And the third one was, you should kill us all on sight. Which is what they say to the human race, of course. Okay, 4-4. Fantastic.
Have you got a tiebreaker ready?
I have got a tiebreaker ready. Oh, yes. Right, question number 9. This is tense, this is. My best friend is a dog. And that is Mike. Mike?
Mike.
Mike. Mike.
Mike.
That's Doc.
Is it Sarah Jane Smith?
No, I'm afraid not.
It's not the 13th Doctor, is it?
No, it's not, I'm afraid. Right. No.
Best friend's a dog.
Okay. Now, this is the thing. You've got to be very quick off the draw here, because this may really give it away. Okay? This second one. My house no longer exists.
Is it Dan?
Go on, Mark. Oh, no. That's
me.
Who buzzed?
Is it Dan?
Yes, it was Dan, and that was Doc, was it, who buzzed?
Yeah. I knew that before you asked the second question.
Right. Excellent.
5-4. If it comes down to a tiebreaker, then the whole round could be decided by whoever edits it.
Okay.
Is that 5-4 to me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, last question.
Okay, question number 10. My husband was dead, but now he is alive.
My husband was dead, but now he's alive. Well, I can't think.
Okay, shall I read another one out?
Yeah, read that part.
Okay. I like flashing my knickers in public.
Hey?
Somebody's going to clip this up, aren't they, and say, it'll be me reading out, I'm an ape-like humanoid.
I have limited vocabulary and I like flashing my knickers.
My house no longer exists and my best friend is a dog.
I like flashing my knickers in... Well, the only one I know about that is...
Oh, I buzzed. Oh.
Sorry.
Well, I'm not just going to say Joe Grant, because he likes flashing knickers.
No, unfortunately not.
But I couldn't work out where the dead husband came in.
Go on, Doc. Your chance for glory.
I was going to say Wendy Padbury, but it was more Fraser who liked flashing her knickers in public. Whose knickers did they run at the flagpole? Was it Wendy or...
Well, this is a character who flashes their knickers, and they
oh,
make
right.
it... I mean... Okay, the final clue is I have a son called Tony.
What?
Oh, wait, what TV show's this?
It's Doctor Who, man.
Okay.
Flashing my knickers.
My husband was dead, but now he's alive. I like flashing my knickers in public, and I have a son called Tony.
Oh!
Go on, Doc.
Is it Jackie Tyler?
It is Jackie Tyler. Well done, Doc.
Of course.
Because she says to Elton, and here I am flashing my knickers.
Yeah, cool.
When they're in the laundrette.
Step 3. Ingratiate yourself with a joke or some humorous device.
I tell you what, Elton. Here we are, complete strangers, and I'm flashing you my knickers.
Well done. So that's victorious for Doc. He's won 6-4. Amazing. The other one, that my uncle was a cigar-chomping businessman who financed Thunderbirds. This was going to be the tiebreaker. I put Live Aid on TV and I cancelled Doctor Who.
Oh, Michael Gray.
Right.
Yeah. It was Lou Gray who was his
yeah,
uncle.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go.
Oh, well done.
And that was Guess Who. I hope you enjoyed that, people.
I enjoyed it very much. Mark.
He said through gritted teeth.
Exactly. No, gritted teeth, I won it. Mark, have you got the next round for us?
Yeah, I have. In my grand Christmas tradition, I've taken a pun and I've put it on the rack and I've torched it to within an inch of its life. It's the... Are you ready? He's strapped
yeah.
in. It's the Whoseum, Who's Seen?
Sorry, Whoseum, Who's Seen?
It's the Whoseum, Who's Seen?
I'm not sure I get it.
Do you know what? I think that thing's been waterboarded to oblivion.
Because who's seen? It sounds like who's seen? Who's seen? Who's seen them?
Oh, right.
It's like a Hartnell at the end. You know it's a good pun if you've got to explain it afterwards.
Yeah, I know.
It's a sign of quality, as far as I'm concerned. Means it's 10 out of 10.
How does the game work, Mark?
Well, as you're aware, Doctor Who is now all completely available, mostly, on the iPlayer. Mm. So what I've done is I've created a game where one of you will take a turn. I will get the Who's In computer to stop on a random Classic Who story at any point during Classic Who, and it will bring up a scene which I will then, which only at first I can see, I will then attempt to describe it to you. If you can get it from my description, you get 2 points.
I mean, entry into Harvard by the sounds of it.
Then if you can't get it from my description, I shall show you the picture of the scene and you need to guess what, basically need to guess what story the scene is from.
Okay.
And if you can get it from that, you get 1 point.
Okie dokie.
Do you want to do a scene each in turn, or do you want to do it with buzzers?
I think we should do it with buzzers, don't you?
Buzzers. Yeah, I'm thinking buzzers.
That's the only way that I can fiddle the edit to make sure that I win. Right, fire away.
Okay. Who's in computer? Please, show me your first scene.
Logging into BBC iPlayer. Diddly dump television license fee not paid. Hacking into BBC iPlayer. Ready. Searching for random scene.
Oh, right, okay. This is, I'm looking at, there's two people in this scene. It appears to be in space somewhere, or I'd say on a alien planet. There's, looks to be some kind of laboratory or engine room. There's a middle-aged man in a kind of beige uniform. He's fiddling with some machine, blue, with red pipes coming out of it. And there's a man stood in the back, well, I don't know if it's a man, it might be a lady. They've got a large green elongated bean-shaped head. Yes, was that Hayden?
Yeah, is that the Leisure Hive?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Hayden. Would you like to have a guess, Doc?
A what-shaped head?
It's kind of a bean-shaped head.
B-E-A...
B-E-A-N, yeah. So sort of
bean-shaped
an elongated
head.
Yeah, green.
Is it the Web Planet?
No, because, I mean, well, for one, it's in colour.
That's in black and white. How would that be green?
Well, I don't know if they had to colourise it while we weren't looking.
Okay, I'll reveal the picture to both of you, and whoever buzzes in first with the correct answer gets the point.
Oh, damn.
Hayden.
Colony in Space.
It is Colony in Space. It's episode 2, 15 minutes and 10 seconds in of Colony in Space.
I'll just save that so we can put it in the show notes.
So, that's 1 point to Hayden.
Bean-shaped!
Right, okay. Are you ready for round 2?
I'm poised!
Right then, who's in computer? Does somebody want to say stop this time?
Stop.
Right. Ooh. Now there's 3 people. They appear to be stood in the TARDIS at the console. There's 2 young ladies and a gentleman. Attractive.
What, the gentleman or the ladies?
Oh, well, all 3, surely. The gentleman seems to have a red knob in front of him. And the young ladies, I'd say one's wearing a kind of burgundy thing with big puffy sleeves and curly brown hair. She's attractive. And the other one's a rather grumpy looking, appears to be wearing the air stewardess's outfit. And the gentleman himself is wearing a uniform. Yeah, it's Hayden.
Is that Earthshock?
No, it's not.
Right, in that case. But in the TARDIS.
In the TARDIS. Have you identified the 2 ladies?
Well, I was just going to say, I think Hayden and I are just going to now work our way through the Doctor's entire era, aren't we? When we're saying a uniform, Mark...
There's 9 stories it can do.
Are we talking a sort of military uniform, or uniform as in it could be a cricket costume?
It's definitely something that would be described as a uniform as opposed to a costume. Although I would say it's not necessarily military.
Oh, right, okay.
Oh, no.
They're in the TARDIS.
Yes.
If it's that sort of uniform, but not necessarily military, is it time flight?
Yes! Yes, it is! Well done!
I was one story out, man.
You were! I completely went, oh, Earthshock! I was like, oh! I nearly said close. I thought that would have given Doc too much of a clue.
It was a coin toss, really, between the airline pilot's uniform in Time Flight and the Edwardian policeman's uniforms in Black Orchid.
Well, the uniform, I thought, was the old soldier boy. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Oh, right, yes.
Look at his big, shiny red knob.
And then you want some cream for that. I like the look that Tegan's giving him as well.
Yeah, I know. It's great. Honestly, these are randomly done as well. So it's like... Okay. Right. Story three, right.
Stop.
Stop, right. Ah, interesting. Okay, well, this is black and white picture, and it seems to feature an elderly gentleman.
Oh, right.
With swept back white hair.
Mm.
Who could it be?
And some sort of necktie thing, and frock coat.
Oh, curse these confounded riddles!
And he's... His head's being engulfed by a veiny tube.
Oh!
Yes, Aiden.
The web planet.
Yes, it is.
Gah.
It is from episode 3 of The Web Planet, 14 minutes and 27 seconds in.
Is our episode going to be called Red Knobs and Veiny Tubes?
Red Knobs and Tube Sticks.
Please remember my mother's listening.
Right, so that's 2 to 8 in that one.
And William Hartnell's not very impressed with our suggestion there, is he, in that picture?
So after 3 rounds, Doc is on 2 points and Hayden is leading with 3.
Hey, I've only got 1.
No, you got time flight. It's just 2 points because you got it from the description.
Oh,
I see. So I've got...
You only get 1 point if you see the picture.
Got you.
Right, so... would somebody like to stop the Hoosian randomizer on this?
Yes, grab that big red knob, Hayden, and give it a wrench.
Stop.
Right, here we are. It's a black and white photograph. It features a young lady, attractive, and a young man. Oh, she's probably attractive too. I mean, he's got his back to me, but I'm sure he's... It's lovely. It's black and white. She has long blonde hair. He has shorter brown hair. She seems to be wearing some, well, I don't know, some sort of groovy clothes. And they appear to be... How you did?
Is it the War Machines?
Yeah, but which episode?
Oh, come on.
You can't do that.
No, I know.
Is it episode 1? Is it in the Inferno nightclub?
No, it's funnily enough, it's just it's a really odd... I did try to do them as randomly as possible.
Oh, it's episode 3.
Yes, it is. Well done. So that's Doc on 2, Hayden on 5.
Oh.
Scene 5. Right then, the Hoosian randomizer's off and...
Stop.
Oh, okay. Right, well, this is colour. It looks to be like some sort of spaceship, except there's a stuffed crow in the... Well, I presume it's a stuffed one. It might have been a live one in the studio. In the foreground of the picture, there's 5 people in the background. 4 of them, I'm not particularly sure who they are. The lady on the right, attractive, long dark hair, a long kind of pale period dress.
Oh. Oh.
And in fact, they're all in period dress, but they appear to be on a spaceship. With a crow. And the lady's attractive. Yes, Doc?
Is it, oh, what's it called? No, don't tell me. It's the ones where they're racing the sail ships through space. Don't tell me. And the crow is obviously the Black Guardian's headpiece.
What did you call him?
It's not called Enlightenment. What's it called?
Yes, it is.
Oh, is it?
But that is the wrong answer.
Oh, it's not.
Oh, after all of that.
Richard Shakes, so I love your bit about the crow being the guardian's headpiece. Aidan, would you like to have a guess?
Right, so there's five people. There's one lady, attractive.
Yes.
And then there's a crow. Ah, hang on. Is it Ghostlight?
Yes!
I'm never going to beat him now.
Oh, smug mode.
You might do. There's still another three to go. That's 6 points up for grabs.
I'm feeling very smug about that one. Sophie Aldred on the front cover of the VHS in a period dress, I seem to remember.
Right. Okay, so I've set the Who's the randomised game, so if somebody says stop, I shall be presented with an iPlayer image.
Stop.
Oh, interesting. None of this is attractive. right, well, it looks like somebody's two people, one either side of the frame, chap on the right, tall chap, wide-brimmed hat, what do they call an oatmeal-coloured jacket?
Is it the Rebus experiment? Operation?
No, it's not. Why did you wait?
I was going to say, why did you go so early?
Because I'm trying to catch up 5 points behind.
He's holding a gun, which he's pointing at a bloke who appears to have just come out of what looks like he's just come out of a lift. I think they're standing in the corner of some sort of studio set. It looks a bit like a corridor. The guy's come out. He's wearing blue overalls, and the man is pointing a gun at him. And the guy with blue overalls has an eye patch.
Blue overalls and an eye patch? Oh, yes. I know what it is. It's the Android Invasion.
Yes, it is.
It's Guy Crayford, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's the Doctor double, isn't it?
Yeah.
With those
the fight in episode 4.
Yes, it is.
Oh, can we serve a Doctor Who fan, Doc? Oh.
No, actually. No, I don't. Haven't you heard my reviews, Hayden?
That is true, actually. He is definitely not a Doctor Who fan.
Oh, right. Anyway, the final round. See if your dog can get some sort of respectable.
Well, I'm losing 9-2 at the moment.
Yes, you are.
Stop.
Oh, well, do you know what? It's almost as if the Whoseum's just tapped into something very deep in my soul there. It's another black and white picture. It appears to be some sort of control room, control centre. There's three people in it. The person in the middle is a young lady.
Attractive.
Very attractive. And there's a man sat to the left of her and a man sat to the right. The man sat on the right is looking down and he's going, attractive. The two men both have headphones on. The young lady is holding a pen and a notepad.
Too late, I got it. It's Invasion.
Yeah, it is Invasion. I thought you'd get it. I wondered if you might get it from the... that one wasn't random. that one's from my own personal collection.
How did that get in there?
Yeah, wait a minute. I'm not sure.
Hayden 194. That was a laugh, actually.
I like that. Yeah, that was brilliant.
That might actually be a game. I might actually bring one of my games back once for once.
We'll put all those individual pictures in the show notes, Faithless Sisters, which you can catch at our blog on at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com. But now it's the moment you've all been waiting for.
Oh, I can't control my hands.
The moment which has been the climax to our last 9 consecutive years of podcasting. It's the Diddly Dum Gold Run. Here we are waiting outside the entrance to the specially designed Gold Run studio. And how do we open the doors? Make the sign of the jive, gentlemen. The sign of the jive. We'll be right back. So, gentlemen, as usual, you have before you... Well, ever since we turned it into a game board laid out on the floor, as they used to do in the adventure game, it's the Gold Run game board. Now, laid onto are a series of tiles containing initials. You can see a copy of this, Faithless Sisters, if you go to any of our various incarnations on platforms like Twitter or Facebook or our blog, links to all of which can, of course, be seen at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com. And as every year, these are a series of questions based on things which have happened in our last 12 months of podcasting. And it's for the boys to get across safely. So, gentlemen, if you're ready, I'll ask you to put yourselves on the hotspot. So, as usual, it's goal to gold in 60 minutes or less, and the clock will start when you choose the first tile.
Oh, okay. Do you want to go first, Hayden?
Ooh, don't mind if I do. Thank you very much, Mark. Doc, can we please go for MSD?
MSD. David Goodison and Terry Malloy.
Oh, my step Davros, says.
Not my.
Mark's step Davros.
That's right, yes. So. Choose another tile, please.
I will go for... I know you don't like us going too quick. I'll go TPP.
TPP. Ah, this is an old one. Christmas mass infection in Adam Brooks' special care baby unit.
Hang on a minute. Okay, so this will be me, won't it?
Yeah.
TPP.
Oh, so some... Oh, is it the pixie plague or something?
It is.
The pixie what?
Plague.
Oh, of course, yeah, because I had to go around and dress them up as little... Well, they were there with little elves.
I wasn't far wrong early today when I said, how will Hayden manage the golden without Mark's help, was I?
No.
Funny enough, no.
Choose another tile, please.
Ooh, could we please go for OPBTA?
OPBTA. The height of Mark's boyhood sci-fi nerdiness.
Was this...
It's the old ones.
I know. Well, in potentially, but not... it's not actually the word.
Okay.
OPBTA. The height of Mark's sci-fi nerdiness. Maybe I should add, as a boy. I liked him because he was the one in charge. I didn't think I should like him because he didn't do as he was told.
Oh. Once preferred Blake to Avon.
Well, it's originally, but yes, that's correct.
Originally preferred Blake to Avon, yes.
I mean, I'm not even a fan of the show, and Mark, I just know that that's just all kinds of wrong.
But he's the goody. He's the show's named after him, Hayden. That Avon's nothing but a troublemaker.
It is very bleak, isn't it, Hayden?
It is.
Choose the tail, gents.
I want to head towards one of those super long ones in the 1, 2, 3 in the fifth column. So,
oh my god! Yeah, I can see the one you're on about now.
Well, there's two in there.
Only because Mark assumes it mentions his name twice.
No, I'm gonna go for HDBF.
HDBF. Trips over Frank Spencer while skating.
Ah, oh, Hayden's dad's best friend.
Yes.
Oh.
Choose another tile.
Can we go for JLLKS?
JLLKS. How the Teardrop Explodes celebrated feisty companions.
Oh, just like Layla Khaled says.
Well done.
Yes.
Oh, good work.
Honestly, Mark, I don't know how you'd do this if Hayden wasn't here to help you.
I'll let Hayden go south. I'm going to keep going north. I'll go TFTW.
TFTW. Disastrous result of trusting guests' plumbing skills.
Ian, wasn't it?
Disastrous result of trusting guests' plumbing skills.
They flood the museum.
What does? It's a thing. A seat?
Toilet.
Floods the museum.
Oh, toilet floods the museum. Right, yes.
In fact, you know, I still, as I'm walking around these marble mosaics on the floor, I still feel it's a bit tacky and not been cleaned properly.
There's a lot of mildew around the place, I noticed, but I didn't want to say anything.
Choose another square, please.
Right, so I'm going south, and Mark's going north.
Do you think you'll continue just going along across that sort of slightly up from centre bit all the way across?
I'll tell you what, I want to go SC, actually. I want to go SC. And then Mark can't go north.
SC, Jamie's great contribution to the TARDIS team.
Scottish canniness.
Oh, not Scottish.
Street canny.
Well, do. Oh, no, do. What did you say? Canny?
Street canniness.
No,
street
not,
cunning.
The cunning.
Street cunning.
It. Choose another tile, please, gentlemen. How are you doing better than last year? You're getting them wrong all over the place.
Hayden's had that break. I'll go for SHT.
SHT. How Tim Burrow's dad used to call for restaurant bills.
Straightened his tie.
Very well done.
Yes.
No, I didn't understand that either. Choose another tile, please.
I did.
ID, ID. Hayden's tutu gaff.
Hey? ID, ID.
Hayden's tutu gaff.
Tutu?
Is it something to do with Desmond?
I've forgotten the fella's name now. Was it Dean? Was he called Dean?
No. You just go for the obvious. Tutu.
Oh, Doc, if only I could.
What did you call across the capital bar to Mark?
Oh,
it's Desmond. It's Desmond.
That's right.
It's Desmond. It's Desmond. To add context to that story, ladies and gents, the reason why I was shouting, it's Desmond across the screen, was because West Ham had just come back from 2-0 down against Arsenal to draw 2-2. And of course, in Cockney rhyming slang, Desmond 2-2, obviously 2-2. Unfortunately, though, I've forgotten the actor's
Dean
name
Hollingsworth.
Now, but Dean Hollingsworth was standing in front of the TV screen and smiling at me, thinking, what the hell's this guy talking about?
I'm not Desmond.
You got his name wrong.
Hayden stood there, pointing. Okay, look, Mark, it's Desmond, confused Dean.
Mark's on the cusp of getting through his long one.
Yep, I'm going to go for it. Can I have MMJSWAAA, please?
MMJSWAAA. 48K Spectrum Games, distracting Mark from 1980s midweek Doctor Who.
Oh, Manic Miner, Jet Set Willy, and Attic Attack.
Oh, well done.
That was brilliant. This is, we're on a hot streak. We haven't got one
Damn.
Yet. Doc?
Yes?
Could I go for TCMS, please?
TCMS? TCMS. The danger of getting one Scotsman to interview another.
Oh, gosh. Obviously, this is going back to the Terence Dicks event,
it
isn't
is
it?
It is, yeah.
And so, they...
well, a version of they.
Oh. They're...
Yeah. think of washing machines.
Oh, I'd do little else. They're clothes.
No. Why should you not put two Scotsmen in close proximity for too long? As accurate as that might be, Hayden, we're not going to have it. No? Are you giving up?
Yes.
Their cycles might synchronise.
Oh!
Oh, we have a first barrier there. Choose another tile, please, gentlemen.
I'll go for SLD.
If you are wondering why the boys are taking such a circuitous route instead of just going straight across Faith and Sisters, because this takes me so bloody long to set this up, I'd kill them if it only took 30 seconds.
Exactly. It's under fear of, it's under fear of death.
This is a very recent one. SLD. Pop Addict, as sung by Elvis Costello's dad.
Secret Lemonade Drinker.
Well
secret
done.
Secret Lemonade Drinker, yeah.
I'm a secret lemonade drinker.
Which I think we found out. I don't think we mentioned it on the podcast at the time, but the guy singing that on that commercial was Elvis Costello's dad.
Yeah, he sung it. He wasn't the actor in the first advert. Do you want to know why I know that?
Why's that?
It's because when I did media studies as a student, we had to watch a program about adverts, most popular adverts, and what made them popular. And we watched that so many times.
Huh.
But that was another one that I added, actually, because it was on, there was a version of it on when I was a kid. Sorry, entertain me for a second here. But when I was a kid, you know when he's tiptoeing that down the stairs and he goes, shh, to the dog? I thought that was a lion and I once had a nightmare.
It's another thing that scared you, along with the specials and swans.
And
the Yellow Pages.
Yellow Pages, it's all to do with adverts, isn't it?
It is.
Choose another tile, please, gentlemen.
Is it my go, is it?
Yeah, look at that big juicy one there.
Can I go for... Oh, yeah, can I pick at that big juicy one there? Can I go for Herfortrum, please?
That's H-F-H-R-T-J-M, yes?
So are you both assuming that the more often your initial is mentioned, the more likely it's been about to be about you?
No, not at all. But although
Mark is seeing through our plan.
H F H R T J M. A Touch of Paradise Lost for Diddly Dum.
It's the M Milton.
Yes.
Just says John Milton.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what this is going to be then. John Milton.
He wrote Paradise Lost.
Family Tree.
Oh, of course. No. Of course, I'm related to him, aren't I? Hayden.
Well, you've just got two of the words in that last sentence.
Hayden finds his...
He's related
to...
John Milton.
You're well done.
Yeah.
Oh, between the two of us, we've somehow stumbled through it.
And you know what? As revelationary as that revelation was, dear listeners... I completely bloody forgot about it until right now.
I know! That tickled me, that did.
Choose another square.
I'm going to go for KP. I was going to go for another one with M, but I thought I didn't want Doc making another smart-ass comment. But,
he's trying to throw us off the easy ones, isn't he, by saying,
KP, Mark's well-worn neighbour.
Kevin Peterson.
No. Well-worn? Might need a scrub?
Well-worn? Might need a scrub. Kit Pedler.
Well done.
Oh, of course.
Mark lives mere metres away from Kit Pedler's grave, don't you, Mark?
Yeah, but funny enough, but I live closer to Bob Geldof, and I was trying to think, but that's not the Bob Geldof's initials. And what's he got to do with Doctor Who?
Mark didn't realise how close he lived to Kit Pedler until he was just told just then.
Let's have another tile, please, gentlemen.
Is it my turn or Mark or yours?
No, it's your turn. I went for KP.
Can I go for MTD, please, Doc?
MTD. Colin Baker in William's Eyes.
Oh, it's Mr. Tumble Doctor.
It is.
Oh, Mrs. Evans.
Tell me another tile, please, gentlemen.
I was going to go for one in the last column, but that means we've won, doesn't it? Does that mean we can only have one from the last column?
Of course.
Well, in which case, I'll go for W.E. then.
W.E. RTD's preference for Terrence Dick's Writers' Award.
William Ems.
Well done.
Oh, I can't believe I remembered that.
I don't want to believe any more of your stuff about you're having a bad memory, Mark. Right, next tile, please, gentlemen. Are you going to go for it?
Ooh.
Thing is, I shouldn't encourage you to use up too many tiles. That means I've got... There's more for me to make up next year.
Can we go for Donkey Kong, please, Doc?
DK?
We go for DK.
Oh. Surprise casting discovery in 1957 film Gunfight at the OK Corral.
Dave Kitchen?
That would be a surprise.
What the hell?
DK. Surprise casting discovery in 1957 film Gunfight at the OK Corral. On which, of course, the gunfighter seems to have been largely based. Although that's not a clue.
Oh, DeForest Kelly.
Oh, well done.
Oh, yeah.
And that's Blockbusters.
That really is Blockbusters.
I'm afraid I forgot inventing interesting prizes years ago. So, oh, well done, gentlemen. So only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 16 right and only one wrong. Well done.
Oh, wow, that's got to be our best ratio ever, I reckon.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Right, well, we're coming to the end of our Christmas podcast, listeners, and in accordance with our new environmentally conscious Christmas, we're also using a holographic Advent crown this year.
Oh, phew. Maybe this year we won't have to be phoning up the insurance company about another fire.
And each week of Advent, we've purchased a flame software patch to enable us to light each holographic candle. So, Hayden, will you do the lighting honours for us, please? Just pop over to the computer console.
Okay, here we go.
And log into the Advent Crown account page. Mm-hmm. Right, here's the Hoosium. Here's the Hoosium credit card. It's only $39.99 a month.
Okay. What, the credit card, or what we're paying for?
What we're paying for, per candle.
Right, got you.
And, oh! Oh, doesn't it look lovely?
Oh.
Right. And, oh! Can you hear some music coming from afar? Why? It's our old friends from the Chalk Farm Salvation Army Band. Could you open the blast doors, please, computer, and turn off the automatic machine gun nests? Thank you. Right, well, listeners, we wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a very happy and safe New Year.
It's Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, Merry Grimbo.
And can you pass my woolly hat, please, Mark? And hey, have you got your muff?
I don't go anywhere without it.
And we're going out to join the carol singers. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah. Cheers.
Happy
Merry
New
Christmas.
Year.
Bye-bye.
Happy Christmas.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dum Podcast. Find us on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Facebook, and Mastodon at Diddly Dum, on Twitter at diddly_dum, or email us at diddlydumpodcast@yahoo.co.uk.
Diddly Dum, it is liquid podcasting. Stick it in your ear, old sunshine.